Hi, everybody, and this is Cherie with Angel Coaches, and I'm really excited tonight. I have an old friend. Well, she's not old. We're always forever 21, right, Heidi? She's with us tonight as a guest speaker, and she's got quite a story about her health, healing on all levels, and coming back, literally coming back and being super strong and working with creating the life of her dreams, has a lot of passion about who she is and what she does. I think you really live it, Heidi, loving what you do and doing what you love, right?
I do, indeed.
Well, I'd like to introduce Heidi Hoke. And Heidi, I know you got a great story, and I know that you're a doctor. You have like a lot of degrees behind your name. But I was looking at that, and I go, the most important thing that I picked up from you and your testimony is, as I just said, you love what you do, and you do what you love. Now, it didn't always start like that. I think that you have a real Cinderella story. You already had the handsome prince, but you needed to be healthy.
So. Only
as
a queen, right?
yeah, exactly. They say that love is everything, but I think your health is even more important than that, almost, having your health. If you have your health, you can do anything. So I know that you have a great story. So share with us, starting out, I think when I read your story, you started out as a small child, and then certain things happened for the past 30 years. So,
right.
And now you're totally healthy. So share with us, how did you get started in your career and, helping people and that kind of thing? Because it sounds like it was from desperation, I think, rather motivated by desperation or inspiration. So how did you get started?
Well, I think your way of describing that is very, very perceptive. It's very much right on. I started probably as a very small child with these symptoms, and we just didn't know what they were. But when I was about 3 years old and was learning to talk, I began talking with an extremely severe stutter, very, very severe. And through school, I had reading problems that were probably not diagnosed or not recognized. Facial tics that I didn't understand, nobody understood. They thought it was nervousness. And times when I would go to other little kids' house and didn't know where I was and didn't remember how I had gotten there. And just different little odd, quirky things that nobody put together. And by the time I was 13, I began having what was labeled as attacks because nobody knew what they were. Nobody understood them. They were very emotional. They made me feel very weak and very fatigued, and I would just collapse into a fit for the lack of a better word. The doctors thought it was anxiety, and of course, at 13, there were a few doctors that chalked it up to hormones, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And what turned into these attacks to be maybe once every 6 months, on into my young adulthood, turned into being much more frequent. And all the time, my stuttering getting worse and worse. It caused a lot of problems in school. I really struggled through school. I really did. But I got through it, and nobody, it was a mystery. It was just, and it became really a part of my identity. Because no one had answers, it just became a part of me. It got worse. It got worse. And throughout my life, I just struggled with doing what I had to do, getting through school, finding a job under the circumstances of not being able to read well, not being able to answer the phone, not being able to speak fluently, having the seizures, not understanding them. And because I had all these things going on, I realized or I felt that maybe academia, college was maybe not the best thing for me. And life skills seemed to be my strongest suit. So I got married very early, at the age of 19. And that was the beginning of a very, very treacherous adulthood. That marriage, I didn't understand who I was, and I didn't understand what really was going on with me. And I had really suffered from a deep, deep sense of lacking self-worth. I really didn't feel that I was going to be amounting to very much in life, and whatever I could get, then I'd better get it. And so I married early. I married a young man that suffered from very extreme and severe mental illnesses. Along with him, I was very sick. We divorced. I went into another marriage, just hoping to just find a home of refuge, and had two children, and suffered a head trauma. And the head trauma only made the seizures worse, the stuttering worse. So, just circumstantially, I went from bad to worse. And I went through so many severe seizures. In a 35-year period, from the time I was about 13 to the time I was about 40, I did the math one day just because I had nothing else to do but lay in bed and stare at the ceiling. And I had figured that I had probably had between 30 and 50,000 of these attacks. Well, they were...
They're called seizures? Were they called...
They were seizures.
They were never diagnosed as seizures.
They were never, ever diagnosed as seizures.
Okay.
And that began to happen when I got, I think my mom and dad just got angry as to why no one had figured out what was wrong. And I began to have EEG testing, and they could never find anything on the testing. But I did have some neurologists that did point out that EEGs oftentimes were not reliable. And I finally got into some care of some neurologists that did, in fact, then begin to label them as seizure disorders. But it was only after they got so much worse that they began to be recognizable as seizures. And I ended up suffering from six different types of seizures. And that's why, because it was not consistent, they were never often similar. But it was because we didn't document, we didn't really pay attention that there was, you know, some pattern, you know. But I went through marriages, very, very difficult marriages. I seemed to be really good at choosing relationships where there was mental illness involved. And because I guess maybe I identified with that structure, that paradigm, and I was comfortable with having mates with mental illnesses. And so I went through three marriages, two of which were very abusive. And finally, I went. I was a single mother. I was a single mother, and I had three children, and I had worked myself through technical school to the point where I could at least earn a living for my child, for myself and my children. And I was at work one day, and I was working as a CAD drafter, and I collapsed.
Wow.
At work. And I had 12 grand mal seizures before they could get me into the hospital. Now, I must back up because before this happened, I had had, during the time that I had the head injury and I had some very, very severe seizures, There was one that I went into, and I was alone when I had the seizure, which was most of the time. I was always alone. And I had what I experienced or could identify as being a near-death experience, an out-of-body experience. And through that experience, I believe I gained the tools, the wisdom, the information download that I needed to be able to get through this in a pattern that not only allowed me to survive it, but allowed me a way or a mechanism to make it a blessing.
Heidi, I want to ask you a couple questions,
sure,
if you don't mind. The first question I want to ask you is, have they diagnosed you yet with epilepsy, officially calling it epilepsy? Or
They had diagnosed me in 2005. I was diagnosed as having treatment-resistant epilepsy, bipolar, and Tourette's syndrome.
Wow, all at the same time.
All
now
three.
Okay. Now, another question I want to ask you is, you had all three of those. That must have been devastating. And you said, okay, I've got to deal with this because I'm the only one supporting my child, children. Is that true? You were the only one there doing it?
Yes, I was. I was at the time. And I, in that course where I had gone through the collapse at work, I didn't come out of it very well, and I had a repeat event very similarly while at the neurologist, and again, they would keep me in the hospital and make observations and just pretty much sent me back home on my merry way with more drugs that just did not, I just didn't respond to the drugs. And I guess they may have felt that because I didn't respond to the drugs and their drugs were not working, then I must really not have anything wrong. You know?
Let me ask you, I understand, and that's so sad. So you're passing out, you're having seizures, you're losing time, you're stuttering, and you can't, your speech is impaired. And they're thinking that really nothing's wrong. It's all in your head.
Oh, right. Basically, yes. Because, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. I hear you. Let me ask you a question now. Because, you know, we're extremely metaphysical here. I think BBS's radio slogan is, if it's not mainstream, it's on BBS. So my question to you is, when you had your NDE, your near-death experience, do you remember anything about that? Do you remember an angel or, you know, God, Jesus, anyone talking to you, or higher power, saying, Heidi, this is, you're going to get better?
I will never forget it. Tari, I will never forget it. I will never forget it. I came out of my body. It was so classic. I came out of my body. I saw for whatever reason, I noticed the time on the clock. It was 10 minutes after 3 o'clock in the morning. And I hovered over myself, and I then flew up, you know, I could see myself, but I was over myself in a distance that was higher than the ceiling. So it was as if there was no ceiling and no roof. But I hovered over myself at about 20 feet, and I watched myself seize. And instantaneously, I was into a tunnel, a very, very bright tunnel, and I begin to be just, it was like being expelled. There's no other word I can use for it. I flew through that so fast, it was beyond recognition. And as I was going through the tunnel, the light got brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter, almost to the point to where it was excruciatingly painful to even see the light. Now,
wow.
I, about the time I felt like, oh, gosh, this is this is too much, it stopped. And then I instantaneously was in the company of five other terrestrial beings. That's the only way I know how to describe them. They were humanoid. They had humanoid features, bodies, but they were milky, opaque, and there was no detail. They had hands, but they had no fingers. They had feet, but they had no toes. They had faces, but they had no eyes, nose, nostrils, no mouth, no. But they had.
Did you feel
no
safe
ears.
With them?
I felt this was all okay. It was all okay.
Okay.
And somehow I knew that this was important. This was very, very important. And I needed to just listen and just be. Just be quiet and be. And they communicated with me telepathically.
Right.
They took me in as one of them, as an equal. I remember we sat around in a circular fashion. We were in a sitting position, but there was no furniture. We were just together, and together in space, in a circular way. And they communicated to me telepathically, and the message was, this is the download. This is what it's all about. This is everything about you. Much like the Akashic Records.
Right.
And this is what it's about. Now that you've had this download, this is what you are to do with this information. But the catch is, when you go back, you will not remember the wisdoms that we've downloaded, because if you knew it, you would not respond, you would not make the decisions that you have to make, you would not live through the process the same. You have to live through the process as you are in physical form. If you know these things, if you remember these things, you will not respond appropriately by divine design. However,
I have a question, okay, for you, because so you have to live. What they're saying is, we're going to take away, I want to be really clear on this, they're going to take away the memory of this being, or this meeting. You're going to be able to remember it, and you're going to live your experiences going through the epilepsy, going through everything that you're dealing with, and the Tourette's, and learning to overcome it. But if they told you how you're going to overcome it, you would have just said, oh, no big deal, you know, and you wouldn't learn the lessons. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
I part of the wisdom was being able to discern my own authenticity.
Ah, okay.
Okay. And I was allowed to remember the experience. I was allowed to absorb the download in my subconscious, but I was not allowed to remember what they had told me on a conscious level. I know that it's there. I know it's within my subconscious. But what they did tell me, and it was very, very true, it's going to get worse before it gets better, and that's by divine design. It's okay. Accept it.
Wow.
Work through it. It's going to be okay. Number two, you're going to receive all of the tools necessary to live this out. And they refer to it as the plan. You're going to be able to live this plan out to fruition with success as you are, because we're going to give you every tool of necessary as you need it on an as-needed basis.
Did you understand at that time that you were going to be able to overcome all this and heal yourself?
I had no idea. I had no idea. I was flying blind at that point. I was flying blind. And that was it. There was never a question that I was going to be staying there. I didn't get the feeling that I had reached heaven. I do not believe I reached what we understand as heaven. I feel that I went to a holding place, a place of information download. They told me they referred to themselves as the messengers.
That is amazing.
They were simply here as messengers. And they were very aloof. They were very, they weren't there to mess around or to waste time. I mean, they were very focused. They were intent. I didn't have an unloving feeling there, but I got the distinct feeling that I was there for very focused purpose.
You were there to get information? Is that what you felt? They were information givers.
It was an information download. And they were there for that intent purpose, for no other purpose but to do their job. And once that job was done, I was back.
Let me ask you a question. When you came back and you had just had that information download and you could remember bits and pieces of it, but as you said, the gist of the message, your soul gets it. I know we always get it on a soul level, but you didn't remember it on a conscious level. When you came back, how old were you at that time? Do you remember?
Yes. I was 39.
Oh, my goodness. So you had a few more years of living this treacherous existence, not knowing where you were, losing time and space, trying to just make it through one day, existing but not really living, right?
Right.
And, and then they said, and you said, you remember this part, before it gets better, it's going to get worse, right?
That's
what they said?
That's what they told me. That's exactly
share
what
with
they
us
told
that.
Me.
How did that happen? What did that look like?
Well, I knew when I got there. I remembered that part. I remembered it was going to get. That was an element that they allowed me to remember, and I went through a divorce. I got through that head injury, but when I got back that very next morning, after I had woken up through my sleep, and I recalled what had happened during those waking hours at 10 after 3. Oh, by the way, when I came back through the tunnel, I was expelled backwards through the tunnel as fast as I went. And when I got back in my body, I looked at the clock, and it was 10. It was the exact same time that I left.
Oh.
That
time doesn't exist on the other side. That's what
exactly.
they said.
For some reason, that was a significant thing for them to show me.
Wow.
That was significant for me to see. Before I went into my body, I traveled into my children's rooms, and I looked at them, and I watched them sleep, and I just simply gave them love. And that's then when I returned to my body and I saw the clock. And that next day, I was pretty—I wouldn't say shaken, but I was pretty within myself. I was pretty much within my own thoughts that day, and didn't quite know what to make of it. I didn't know if I should tell my husband about it. I didn't know how people would. I didn't know if I should share it at all. You know, at that time, it was mine and mine alone. But I went through, so to answer your question, I went through that day, and through that day, I kept experiencing life very differently than I had before, to the point to where the house that I was in, the room I was in, the the environment I was in didn't even seem like my own. I went to, you know, the clothes in my closet didn't feel right. And through the next 6 months, I went through a period where I just didn't feel right in my own body. I didn't feel like I was the same person. And I don't know, this somewhat is a little bit, this suggests to me a walk-in situation. As you know, that's been, you know, spoken of during Virtue, talks about that. And yeah. And this felt, in hindsight, that's what it felt like. And so through that 6 months, my looks changed, my demeanor changed, my habits changed, my dress was different. I tore all of my clothes out of my closet. I went to Goodwill. I donated them, and then went, I went right through the front door, and I got a different wardrobe. I started back to school. I did things that my husband didn't understand. I had different habits. I cooked differently. I dressed differently. Nothing was the same as before, and that did not allow the marriage to survive. Within 6 months, I was divorced. Went through another marriage that was another hardship. When I hit rock bottom was when I had the 12 seizures. And the 12 seizures I had that day, and then it happened again 12 weeks. Well, I began having that many seizures on a daily basis. And when I hit bottom was when I was having so many seizures day after day after day that I was in a constant vegetative state.
You had to, let me ask you a question before you go any further. You had so many seizures that you had to quit your job. If I remember reading your testimony correctly, you had to quit your job, give everything away, go live with people to support you because you couldn't work.
Exactly.
You couldn't function.
I couldn't see my kids. My children had to go to family members.
Oh, wow. And you were in a vegetative state, so you were at home sitting there watching the four walls or
laying
having a seizure?
Laying in bed. I would, my present husband was really my, he's been both my rock and my heart, my soft place to fall. He has been the supportive, he's been the one that stuck with me through all of this to fruition. And I was basically in bed staring at the ceiling, and I remember I had to be alone. And when he went to work, I said, please put the television on channel 21 so that I know at 2 o'clock Jerry Springer will come on and I will come back into consciousness.
Oh,
the noise, you know, that overstimulation will help me come back to consciousness at 2 o'clock.
Heidi, that is amazing. I did not realize that you're waiting, living your life like that. You had to let your children live somewhere else. Your husband was taking care of you. You're not watching Jerry Springer, but that's your alarm clock to make sure you're back in.
Yes. That was the, you know, in all fairness, you know, but it was honest. That was the loudest, most rambunctious thing that I could find on TV, and that's what brought me back. That overstimulation of sound brought me back to consciousness out of my vegetative state, and at least for a little while, maybe I could go to the bathroom, maybe.
You know? Wow. So you're laying in bed, basically. If I'm reading correctly, that happened around at 43 when I was looking at your testimony this morning.
That's true, yes.
And were you visiting doctors, or were they trying to help you, or were you just saying, hey, I just screw it, I can't do doctors anymore, or had you gotten to that?
I did doctors. I did so many doctors. I was under the care through all of, with 8 neurologists, 2 epileptologists, and neuropsychiatrists, and they were all giving me medication that didn't work. I just was not responsive to the medication. So therefore, my rock bottom, again, I had three full bottles of anticonvulsants that were not doing me any good. And I thought, you know what? I could take all of these at once. This is an option mm-hmm. for me.
So you were considering suicide?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because I knew that on the other side, it just wasn't all that bad. It was certainly better than what I was living now, you know, and I was willing to take that risk, you know. My kids were gone. My kids were in safe places. My life was just so simple. I had nothing.
You had nothing to lose. Right? You didn't feel like
all of my affairs I had put to order. I had given everything away. My money was, what little money I had was where it needed to be for someone else to use. My assets were in order. I had nothing. Nothing was to be done. There was nothing to be done. You know, I had it all planned out that suicide was definitely an option for me if I needed to fall back on it.
Let me ask you a question, okay? So you're laying there, and you went to all these doctors, and I think if I read correctly, there was they were even considering brain surgery.
They were.
They were.
And the reason why I didn't do it was I had lost all my health insurance, and I had no financial means to have the surgery. That's the only reason why I didn't go through the surgery. And I was only given a 50-50 chance of even any kind of, not even recovery. They didn't even suggest recovery. You know, they said, well, you might have about half the seizures as you're having now. Well, I don't know about anybody else, but 5 seizures a day isn't much different than 10 or 12. It doesn't really allow you that much more higher quality of life. And I thought, well, I don't see that that's a real advantage. And I went through this one day, and I thought, okay, I've got a month's supply of, you know, 3 of these medications, you know, at 4 tablets a day. You know, I've got a couple of hundred, you know, pills here. I could just down these right now. I could down them all and just be done with it. And my memory of them, telling me, the messengers telling me, it's going to get worse before it gets better. This is the divine plan. It's okay. It's okay. It's part of you moving forward. And at that moment, I said, okay, this is it. I recognize this as being what they were talking about. This is the worst before it gets better, so it's going to get better. I know that. So what I have to do to make it better is protect myself from myself. So I took the pills, and Jerry Springer was on. And I was able to pull myself. We lived in an RV at the time. I was able to pull myself from the bed 10 feet over to the bathroom. And when I went to the bathroom, I pulled all of the pills, and I poured them, every last one of them, down the toilet.
What a great, great moment. That was really a real epiphany for you.
That's all I could do. That's all, and I thought, if I could get these down the toilet fast enough, that's my first step. And I did, and I shuffled back.
Friday morning. Let me ask you a question: is that the Friday morning in 2003 where you said, "Okay, I'm going to stay. I'm not going to leave," or was that a different time?
No, that was it. That was it, Tari. That was
okay.
It. That was the morning. That was the Friday morning, and I said, "Okay, the pills are gone. You're going to have to tell me what to do next, because I don't know. I'm not in any better position as I was before I did that. So tell me now." And I went into a 3-day sleep. I did not wake up. And David knew I was okay. He knew I was okay because I would, I'm sure that he was able to bring me out of the sleep. I don't remember it. All I remember is being asleep and it being 3 days later when I woke up.
So you did a Rip Van Winkle kind of thing, slept for 3 days.
I did, exactly. And when I woke
let me ask you a question. Did you, when you were coming in and out of consciousness, and I'm reading your testimony, and you're going to sleep for 3 days, did you have an epiphany about nutrition, about naturopath, you know, medicine? When did that come about? Was that after
when
the 3 days?
When I woke up, you know how when you're coming out of your sleep in the mornings and you have these ideas, how you get real creative and things just pop into your head. And I woke up after this sleep, and I don't even remember, but I woke up and I thought, oh, Adele Davis. Adele Davis, the pioneer of nutrition of the 1960s. I used to read her books when I was 9 years old. Mm. And I thought, oh, nutrition. I've got to do this. I've got to somehow tap into this resource. And I was feeling good. For the first time, I was feeling good. I had been asleep for 3 days, and for 3 days, my brain had begun to heal just even in that moment. That was the first sign that my brain was beginning to heal.
That's amazing. Heidi, I have a question for you, okay? And this is really, really important, I feel. You said, and I'm reading your testimony, you'd had some experience with getting success with natural medicine and natural doctors, and then you didn't follow through with it. And I know some of us don't do that. You know, we drop the ball with what we feel our life purpose is, and then we pick it up later. Do you feel that it was just part of the divine plan for you just to look at it a little bit and try it a little bit and get some success and then go through all of this to go back to it?
I had a wonderful naturopathic doctor before I had the breakdown, you know, with the 12 seizures. I had a wonderful, wonderful naturopathic doctor. But he was working in Dallas and in Paris and Paris, France, and also in Switzerland. And he traveled those three places, and I didn't get to work with him to the extent that I wanted to, and he moved out of the country, and I just dropped the ball on that. And he was very good at helping me to realize that, you know what, this is ultimately your deal, you know, your responsibility. Getting well is your responsibility. And that came back to me, too. You know, after the sleep, I thought, you know what? Nobody really cares, really. You know, it's mm-hmm. not anybody's real responsibility to get me well. This is my responsibility. It's my responsibility to love myself enough and to value myself enough to help, to find a solution to this predicament that I'm in. And so that's what I did. And I fortunately had the strength at that time, after that sleep, I remember telling David, can we go to Barnes & Noble? I want to get some books. Well, he was somewhat shocked because I hadn't asked to go out for some time. And honestly, I was a little bit agoraphobic because I was so afraid I would just, you know, always have seizures out in public and everything, and I just really didn't like to go out, so I was a bit of a hermit. And we went to Barnes & Noble, and I got three books that I felt were useful. Brought them home. My cognitive ability was not very good. Sometimes I'd have to read a sentence 10 or 12 times before I remembered it or could understand it or could, you know, conceptualize what it was saying. But even this was therapy. The reading was therapy. And I began to implement put into action the prescriptions, the natural prescriptions that I was able to read about in the books that I got on natural healing. And that's where
now,
it started.
It started there, but let me ask you a question. I'm looking here because I want to ask you this. You got out of that, you started working on yourself, and I know I met you around that time, I think 2005 or 6, I don't remember.
It was the latter part of 5 and early part of 6, and it was through the natural healing processes that I was finally beginning to be able to go out in public. And David was very good to encourage me to stretch the envelope of what I felt I was capable of doing. Do you know? He would encourage me to do things that I thought maybe was a little bit scary because it's not fun seizing in public while you're alone. That's just not cool. And but he was very good at being able to discern whether or not I was ready for a particular event. And when he could see that I was okay for that time, he would encourage me to go out. So he would drive me to
your meeting.
To places, right. And that's where I met, when I met you. And you were giving a healing a program on Reiki and on healing, and I remember being in the corner, and I admired what you were doing. I so admired what you were doing, and I was hungry to learn about the different modalities. And I had read about energy healing, so that wasn't totally foreign to me. And when I could see that you were what I was reading about, I felt that I needed to really pay attention because, again, in my mind, it was very clear to me to begin looking for tools. That had occurred to me. And I had then recognized that the prescription for natural healing, the books, all of the modalities I was reading about was the educational process of me learning about the tools and how to use them. And I was, that night, I'll never forget that, I was sitting over in the corner, kind of back away, because I didn't want to draw attention to myself. And I admired you, and I admired the moment. I was so grateful for the moment. And I remember hearing you and listening. And after the program, I remember you made eye contact with me many times, multiple times, and I thought, I think I'd like to go and talk to that lady. And so when it was over, I came to you, and as I came to you, you also met me. You came to me halfway, and you said, you are a healer. You
Heidi, I'll never forget that. I remember that. I do. Yeah. Huh.
You are a healer. And that made an impression on me, Tarie, like none other. None other. That was an epiphany, because I realized then I can have total faith in all of the experiences I have had. It was a validation, because I thought, yes, this is what they meant about tools, people, places, events, modalities.
That is amazing.
All of these are tools. And I received your words with somewhat of a, I won't say disbelief, but skepticism, because I was still in that mode of, as sick as I am, how in the world am I a healer? How does that happen?
I remember looking at you, and I remember getting that message from the angels. I was like, I'm going to tell her that, you know. And I remember, because I was talking about Reiki, angels, healing, and everything that night. There were some great souls in there, and we had a good time.
Yeah, right.
But you, because we got a couple callers, and I want to take them, and I know that we've got to do this in two parts of a show here, because we're not going to finish tonight, because I know you've got some amazing healing modalities that you're working with, because you're a doctor now.
Not quite. I'm getting there. I'm actively working on my PhD in naturopathy, and I'm I'm targeted for December 21st to finish.
That is wonderful. I know that you got a Bachelor of Science degree and as a holistic health practitioner.
Correct, correct. And a master's in homeopathy, Master's of Science in homeopathy.
That is amazing. And this, you've done this, and as you've been healing yourself, you've been studying and getting knowledge and are gaining knowledge and going to school where you're now, academia is now part of who you are. That's amazing.
Oh, I love it. I didn't know I was smart. I never knew I was smart.
I hear ya. Well, now you are, and you're, and I think that you've healed your, I see that you've healed your Tourette's and all the stuff that you're doing, or it's under control, whatever you want
everything
to say, but you don't suffer from it anymore.
No.
The fibromyalgia, the Tourette's, the epilepsy.
No.
And I know that you talk to doctors, you do lectures, you do conferences now, you're getting your PhD, and that is one heck of a Cinderella story. And I know that you've got some new things that you're going to share with us the next time you're with us, and I want to talk to you about that. I think you're going to be on Blog Talk Radio, and to share. But I want to talk to you about things that you're working with people with cancer, with hearing problems, with vision, with diabetes, with ADD, ADHD, all those things. Correct? You're doing
correct,
all that now.
Correct. Correct.
You've got patients and clients, don't you?
I do. I have
That's
clients.
Amazing.
I have. I'm fully operational in a private practice, and just moving forward, trying to get through the academia. And I'm, as soon as I finish that, a book is definitely in order. A book is.
I know. I feel
that will come next. Yes.
I feel that as well. And you, I mean, Heidi. But one of the things that I get with you is, and I was reading this, and you said that natural medicine was your last resort, and now it's about 6 years later from when I met you, and you're all this and more. And you, I think what you said that it's your profession, it's your ministry, it's your passion, and sharing support and self-empowerment to those who seek your help. With equal commitment and determination that you use for your own healing. I'm sitting there going, sign me up. I want to be in your doctor care, okay?
So people, Tariq, I get the clients that have no other alternative. Their doctors have told them there's nothing else that can be done, and they are looking for hope. And believe me, it's there.
You show them how to heal them.
It's there. And it's within self. It's within self. It's just a matter of having that sense of self-empowerment to find what is going to work. The answer's there. It's just a matter of finding
it. That is amazing. Heidi, I'm looking at you. You're in a vegetative state, and now you're doing radio shows, TV shows. You're lecturing. You're getting your PhD. You've got clients. A great story, and we've got to do two parts of this story because you've got some wonderful healing modalities and techniques that I want you to share with people if you would be so kind to come back, and if that's okay. But we've got a couple people that really want to talk to us, so do you mind if we have bring them on? So
sure,
I think the first one is.
Sure. Thank you.
I think, I thank you. I'm telling you, you got to sign me up. I know that we're going to talk about that the next part of the show. But Maureen from Tacoma is on line one. I hope she's still there. We might have lost her because she's been waiting for a while. Maureen, are you there?
I am there. And thank you so much, Heidi, for that amazing, inspirational story.
You're welcome.
Of healing. It's just phenomenal. And as somebody who's in academia, I just have to say, that International Association of Near-Death Studies. Those are people who actually study, of course, the near-death, and I know you know all about it. Mm-hmm. But to me, those stories also are so powerful, and, it's just amazing what the transformation is. But you are such an inspiration to go where you've gone on this planet, in your body. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I mean, that's so sweet. Do you have any kind of questions?
Calling you with I have a quick question, and that is, I am having some sort of issue on the lower right-hand side of my body, And I know that it's a wheat allergy, so I've stopped eating wheat. But now it just seems to kind of be there, and I don't know what it is, and I can't kind of track it.
Mm-hmm. I can't speak for you, but I can speak for what I experienced. And I will say that I thought I was eating so well, and I realized how much better I could eat. And I learned that my brain was so toxic from the time I was a child of preservatives and additives and heavy metals. And once I was able to go through, it took me 7 years of healing, but once I was able to go through the process of detoxifying my brain. And see, that's harder to do. We can detoxify our body easy enough, and, you know, with a detox system, and, you know, in a month or two later, we're good to go for a while. But detoxing the brain is something very different, because it's in a much, much deeper level. And as nutrients have a bit of a challenge getting through the blood-brain barrier, toxins also have a bit of a challenge of getting out of the brain through the blood-brain barrier. So while I don't suggest that it would ever take anybody else 7 years to recover, in my world, that's what it took. That's what it took. But and I'm still working on it. I'm not 100%, but I'm about 95%. But I still recognize that there is a hypersensitivity there that is disturbing, and that may be what you're dealing with, is just a hypersensitivity. I would suggest that you study the psoric miasm in homeopathy. Do some self-study.
Can you spell that? Oh, can you spell that?
Psoric. P-S-O-R-I-C. Psoric. It comes from psoric miasm. M-I-A-S-M. It's DNA damage that comes from the generations and generations and generations, eons back, from leprosy. When leprosy was so dominant in back, you know, a long time ago, our bodies learned to adjust, and the DNA was damaged. And as the DNA was damaged, it just was carried on through generations, and it puts us at predispositions to certain disease. I would suggest that you specifically check that miasm out.
Maureen, I hate to do this to you, but we got a couple callers. I'm trying to get as many in, but we're going to have her back. She's also going to be on Blog Talk Radio. If you go to my site, angelcoaches.org, and check it out. And then I want to have her back here, because we're all getting all spruced up here. So, okay.
What's Katie's last name?
Hoke.
What's Katie's last name?
H-O-K-E.
Pardon?
H-O-K-E. Vitae Pondera is a health and education center, is where you'll see the most amount of internet information on Vitae Pondera. VitaePondera.com. Vitae Pondera.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
I will see. If you'll go to, Maureen, if you have any questions, go to my site and send an email. I'll make sure, but I've got to go move on. I think we have Russell from, we have Russell from Arkansas. I think. Is AK Arkansas? I probably need a little more academia.
That's it. Russell.
We have Roger from Alaska.
Oh, Roger from Alaska. Roger. Alaska. I'm so sorry. Sorry
okay.
about that.
Hello to you. You're glowing. Thank you for sharing. That's interesting. Yeah, I just got maybe three little tiny questions. I'm looking at a birth date for myself. Was it 46 or 47?
Oh, you want a birth date for yourself that you want to be 46 or 47?
Yeah, was it the year 46 to 47, do you see?
47.
That's what I saw. Yeah, thank you. And then do you see me moving from Alaska to Portland or Vancouver, Washington, and back and forth? Do you see something like that?
I see you moving, and it doesn't feel settled. It feels like you're moving back and forth, okay?
Okay, so. Okay, that's what it's going to be. It'll be back and forth, okay, because I just bought a cabin here, but it looks like I'm being drawn to Vancouver, Washington. Okay, one more thing. Do you feel that the Iraqi dinar will rate value shortly?
Yes, I do. And let me tell you something. I'm going to have a guy on in the next 3 weeks on this show that's going to talk about that. Okay? So you don't want to miss it. He's amazing.
You're glowing, and it sounds beautiful, and it sounds like this is I just thank you for your sharing your gift.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much. Well, Heidi, I'm going to have to close the show because we're going to run out of time. Stacy's waiting. Stacy, I'm so sorry, but we're going to have her again. Heidi, what's the name of your website? And I'll send out an email about it, or they can email angelcoaches.org to get it if anybody doesn't get the name. But say the name of your website.
VitePondera.com. Means life balance. That's what it means in Latin. VITAEP is in Paul, ONDERA.com.
Good deal. Anyway, and for all of that, thank you, by the way. We're going to have you again because there's two parts to this program. And you guys go to angelcoaches.org, also Angel Coaches or Facebook/Angel Coaches to put your comments down or if you have any questions you want to ask Heidi. And I think you've been wonderful, Heidi, but I want to go into where we can really talk about nuts and bolts about what you do and some things that people have got questions about, because I know you got a new treatment that you told me about that I'm super excited about that will really help people heal. And I would like to be your first patient. Anyway, good night, everybody. Take care, and we will see you next Friday night at 7 p.m. Good night, everybody.